Morning. There are more than 1.5 million nonprofit and community organizations in the U.S. They have an absolutely huge impact on our neighborhoods, our world. They enrich people's lives. And Scott Becker is here. He's president of the Nissan Foundation and Nissan Senior Vice President of Administration. He's here to talk about the benefits of living and working together in a diverse society and how people can get involved today to make their communities better places for all. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Twanda. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about the Nissan Foundation.
Yeah, the Nissan Foundation has been around for 24 years now. It is an organization that was founded with the mission of fostering greater respect and understanding among cultures. Our purpose is to support education, to make sure that there's a greater level of education and understanding around the rich cultural diversity within the United States.
You know, I think that's so important. I always told my kids, we're going to go to other countries because once you understand other cultures, the world will be such a better place.
We could not agree more. We think it's a critically important mission. Mm-hmm. It's very important and close to our heart, both because we have such a widely diverse base of customers and dealers and other partners across the U.S., but also because we have a very diverse base of customers in the United States. In fact, 38% of our U.S. customers are ethnically diverse. That's actually the highest percentage among any of the major automakers. So from Nissan perspective, it's very close to our heart, and I think at times like these, it's critically important for us to continue to invest significantly in promoting diversity and inclusion.
You know, it's so true. You couldn't have said better words in times like these. I mean, when we see what's going on in the news around the world, it is crazy, and we've got to do a better job with this.
Well, the grants that we're providing in the Atlanta area really are kind of geared in that direction to make sure that we're doing more. We're very proud today to announce that we're supporting the Catholic Charities in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. They have a program, their Refugee Education and Engagement Project for people that are obviously new to the United States. We've been supporting them for the past 4 years. Mm-hmm. We're also, for the fifth year in a row, going to be supporting at Fernbank Museum of Natural History, a program they have called Winter Wonderland, which celebrates traditions around the world as well. Mm-hmm. And we're also very pleased, for the first year, we're going to be supporting the National Center for Civil and Human Rights, which has a multicultural program.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we're really looking forward to building a relationship with them. I know they're doing some great work in your community.
That is phenomenal. And again, you see the multicultural bent that is going on in those three organizations. How can other nonprofits apply for a grant from the Nissan Foundation?
Yeah, thank you, Twanda. We definitely welcome new applications. And what I would encourage any nonprofits out there that are interested to do is to go to our website at nissanusa.com. There is a page for the Nissan Foundation. Provides information about the grant cycle as well as a link to an application. Mm-hmm. So we look forward to hearing from others in your community.
That is phenomenal. Have you thought about why so many people of different nationalities come to the Nissan dealerships to buy cars?
We like to believe that it's part of our overall commitment within a lot of communities. We try to do a lot to outreach in different places where we live and work. It's very much a part of the corporate culture. So I think customers these days really care a lot about on a deeper level about what a brand stands for and who the people are. And we're very proud of the people we have within the company and the work they're doing in our communities.
You know, that's very true. I know I'm a kind of a stickler about that. I want to know who that company is that I'm investing my dollars in, whether it's, you know, a piece of cloth or whether it's a house. I want to know, you know, where those people come from, what they believe in. And it's so true that we do think about those things today.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's a very big part of who we are, and I think in a world with social media and all of the points of connection that we have, it's that much more important for us to reach out to other people and build bridges, and that's something we're very deeply committed to here.
That is phenomenal. Give that website one more time.
Once again, it's NissanUSA.com.
All right, Scott Becker, thank you so much for joining us and sharing and for all the work that you do in the community.
Thank you kindly, Twanda.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Twanda Black. And of course, summer is here and it's a good time to get a handle on what's causing your pet to itch. You know, we see them scratching and licking and chewing and how to control it. It's hard to tell if the source is fleas, food, or something in the environment. But we have veterinary dermatologist and Royal Canin spokesperson, Dr. Jeannie Budgen, joining us to debunk a few pet allergy myths. Welcome, Dr. Budgen. And I can tell you, I have a black lab, and as soon as spring hit, she started sneezing. She has the worst allergies this year, and it's never happened before.
How old is your black lab?
She's 14. Yes, yes. She gets outside and she is sneezing her little head off. It's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, sneezing can be a sign of airborne allergies. Certainly in people, we tend to think of reaching for a tissue when our allergy season strikes. But more commonly, we actually see dogs and cats itching, chewing or licking, scooting, or even being prone to ear and skin infections with underlying allergies.
So what can they be allergic to? Tell us about that.
Well, the most common form of allergy is actually a reaction to fleas, or what's called a flea allergy. The other two types of allergies we see include adverse reactions to food or food allergies, as well as airborne allergies.
So tell us about the difference in what we'll see in the food allergies or the environment, or is there a difference?
It's a great question. Food allergies and airborne allergies can cause very similar symptoms. You know, you mentioned that your dog is sneezing or showing some signs in the summer months. And with seasonal allergies or reactions to things like pollens, such as trees, grasses, or weeds, we sometimes see symptoms at different times of year, so when things are pollinating, for example. With food allergies, it's usually a reaction to something in the diet, and it could be an ingredient that your pet has been eating for a long period of time, or even something in a treat, or a flavored medication or toothpaste.
You know, and also, I mean, you need to talk about, you know, stuff we give them off the table. We don't give our dogs anything off the table. She begs, and we're just looking at her and I'm, no way. But a lot of people feed their dogs from the table.
That is right. And you know, I think we have this kind of misconception that it's great to sort of spice up our dog or a cat's diet. We probably should be as consistent as possible with what we feed. And most dogs and cats do very well with the same diet. And when you mix up the diet or switch it up on a regular basis, that we can trigger intestinal problems.
So true. Now, how do you diagnose a food allergy in a pet? How do you do that?
Well, the only reliable way to diagnose a food allergy is to do what's called a food elimination dietary trial. And there are a number of diets available through different pet food companies, including Royal Canin. And the idea is that you feed a very restricted diet. So this might be a novel protein diet or a diet containing a protein that your pet has never eaten before, or what's called a hydrolyzed diet, which is a diet containing broken down protein. And you feed this diet for a period of 10 to 12 weeks. This is true whether you're feeding a cat or a dog. And during that time, you work with your veterinarian to monitor your pet for improvement. If you document improvement, in other words, your pet is no longer itching or scratching or prone to infections, then you actually follow that food trial with what's called a food challenge, where you reintroduce previous proteins or the diet to confirm that your animal will react to them and has a true allergy.
That's very interesting, and I'm sure a lot of people are sitting up taking notice, because we do see our pets doing exactly those things. But what about flea allergies? I know we had a cat one time, and we lived in a really wooded area, and she brought fleas into the house, and it was just horrendous on both sides. It really was.
Well, fleas are the most common form of allergy in both cats and dogs. And depending on where you live, and I believe you're calling from Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Atlanta.
Really common in the southern states, a little less common where I am in the Northeast. It can cause tremendous amounts of discomfort and sometimes triggered just by the bite of a single flea or two if you're very sensitive to them.
Okay.
So prevention is key. There's very good and effective flea preventative products available.
Absolutely, absolutely. Tell us where we can go for more information.
You can visit Royal Canin's. They have a website called mypetreference.com, and certainly talk to your veterinarian.
Okay, and everybody should have a veterinarian. Dr. Jeannie Budgen, you know, some people still believe dogs belong outside. You don't have to take them to the doctor or anything. So that's a whole nother subject. But thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye.